Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 98. We're discussing the Shriners Open on the PGA Tour and the Open to Spania on the European Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour preview at Golf Betting System. And with me, we have Golf Betting System's European Tour expert, Paul Williams. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve. How's things?
Very good. Very good indeed.
Good.
GolfBettingSystem.co.uk is our website, naturally available on social media. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Paul's available at Golf Betting. I'm available at Bamford Golf on Twitter. Look out for the Golf Betting System YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. Just recorded the Shriners Open show. Podcast available on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. Now, have a rather long and detailed and very much appreciated review here to read from last week. It's from Viaticus, and he is in the UK. It's actually Graham from London. Five stars, a must tool for serious golf punters. I've been betting on golf for around 15 years, focusing mainly on the US PGA Tour. It has been challenging at times finding the right type of information and statistics that are needed to make informed decisions. These guys really nail that aspect. The course breakdowns, the skills required that week, recent form, legacy results, even down to who lives near the tournament venue in the week. It's invaluable. I now wait for the podcast before making my picks. You have to. I also then cross-reference my chosen stats selections against the predictor model. This is an amazing tool that really helps me confirm my decisions. I don't use it to make my picks. I use it to make sure I haven't missed anything and support my decisions. If, like me, you're a golf fan, but picking winners and making profit is a priority, you're not doing due diligence if you're not using the tools at Golf Betting System. Thanks, Steve and Paul, and keep up the good work. That's from Graham in London.
That's a fantastic review, Graham. Thank you very much for taking the time to write that and for your kind words. I'm very pleased that you get a lot out of the site, not just the podcast, but also the stats and the predictor, as you said in the review as well. So, fantastic stuff.
It's where we're at, isn't it?
Brilliant.
No one would follow my tips right now, that's for certain.
Aside from the previews and the, you know, our view of who we think is going to go well, there is a lot of other stuff on the site to get your teeth into. So I know people dip in and out of various parts of it to their heart's content, which each for their own.
Absolutely. 100% on that. Last week I had Varna in the mix, well, kind of in the mix. If he'd have shot something 68, 67 on the Sunday, he'd have got a place. I had Fratelli, who was third after 36 holes, then started three putting from 4 feet on Saturday, never a winner.
No.
And then played really nicely once he was out of contention again on the Sunday. And he fell a shot shy, didn't he? That's an interesting one for golf punters. The dilemma about price and places. That particular week, last week, Fratelli was 66-1, only at one outlet, which was Unibet, six places each way.
Yeah.
Elsewhere, 50-1. So you think, well, God, I can't turn down 16 points. It's hard, isn't it?
It is, yeah. 16 points, and you're trading that off for two places, potentially. Yeah. And then it comes and bites you on the backside.
It comes and bites you on the arse when you're a shot shy, and yet you would have actually got a return with the eight places at the
fifth. Yeah, he finishes in the tie for seventh, and he gets sod all back, which is frustrating. But that is the choice you make, isn't it, unfortunately?
You, on the other hand, managed to get a 100-1 part return with Tom Lewis and 125-1 on Lagergren, full each way payout. So well done for that. It's a nightmare tournament, I always think.
There's stuff to grab onto, but it is, I know, it's often described as a lottery by punters, and I know a lot of people kind of steer clear or lower the stakes for the week, but I think if you're careful about it and go for, I didn't go mad with the picks. I only put four up last week, and ultimately, yeah, as you say, Lagergren finished in tie for third, so that was nice. Lewis a tie for fifth, so got a chunk of the each way back. Actually, Richie Ramsey was only a shot shy of sharing that fifth place as well.
Lowry started like a mug, didn't he, and then came through. All four of yours were in the top 17 in the end?
Yeah, they were. Yeah, I had a nice week on DraftKings. I came third overall in the $8 DraftKings contest, big public contest. That was nice. So, yeah, it was not to get the winner was a shame, but then I don't think I would have had Victor Perez, and I'm not sure many others would have picked him just looking at his raw stats and history.
I don't think many had Victor Perez or Cameron Champ.
No. I mean, Champ, we know, is an uber-talented player, but
he's shown very, very little. Very little.
Yeah, highly inconsistent. I mean, with Perez, a few things came out, didn't they, in the commentary about him having moved to Dundee and his girlfriend studying locally. And, we knew that it was a talent. He'd won, I think he'd won each year for the last 3 years on his various tours that he's been playing on, but really hadn't quite stepped up to the... To the mark on the European tour, but he won it with some style in the end. I mean, Matthew Southgate, he got a feel for Southgate because he's got himself into a position a number of times. And I was sitting there, you know how many times I've backed Southgate on links courses over the last two or three seasons. And I scrubbed him off the list. He played there three times at Dunhill Links and he'd missed the cut each time. So despite everything, and I've backed him when he's come into links events with poor incoming form and been quite comfortable doing that, and he was it was off the list because he had played it three times and it'd done nothing. I mean, you go back, he's got form in the St Andrews Links Trophy as an amateur, he's got a wealth of Links form out there, but I just couldn't quite justify it. And then you see him in with a great chance of winning the title, but he really tightened up on the back nine from kind of the 14th onwards. You could just see the pressure building, and he put a massive amount of pressure on himself to try and get over the line. And ultimately, I think that was his downfall. He just needs to be able to overcome that, and he will win a lot of links-based or similar kind of events, because that's absolutely his forte. It's all between the ears, this game, Steve. No, all between the ears, isn't it? We see it so many times. The players just... really get defensive and really tighten up when the finishing line's in sight. Whereas Perez, he stuck to his game and got the job done. Well done to him. Big prize for him. That's a big pot for the Dunhill Links and some big ranking points for him for the rest of the season. So good stuff.
What did you reckon to Rory McIlroy's rant?
I don't know. Sour grapes, wasn't it? And you look at it and you think, well, if you're not able to compete on these events, or you're moaning that you can't compete on these events where the winning total is kind of 20 under or thereabouts, then go and work on your putting. But actually, it's not tended to be his putting that's been letting him down recently. He's actually been putting quite nicely. I think he was a bit sour that he didn't win the Pro-Am with his dad. He got... picked on a technicality, didn't he, by Tommy Fleetwood. And I think that would have meant a hell of a lot to him to have won that title with his dad. And, just for his, I think it was for his dad's 60th birthday that it got him that star. And I think a few things came out that perhaps didn't need to. He doesn't need to be disrespecting where the tour that gave him the leg up in the first place. I don't think it's a bit of a shame, but that's where he is. He speaks his mind, and spoke his mind.
I'm sort of honestly sick of coming back to the European Tour and shooting 15 under par and finishing 30th. I don't think the courses are set up hard enough. There are no penalties for bad shots. It's not a good test. Well, I suppose the point is, it's a pro-am, isn't it?
Well, it is a pro-am. He knows what he's
getting
into.
It's meant to be set up easily, isn't it? Because, you're playing with amateurs. If you set it up like an open championship, some of these guys would be shooting 40, 50 over par.
Wasn't he come and play Valderrama then? You know, the door's open for him to come and play an event like that, but or the Indian Open or something where there's going to be a real challenge. The scoring isn't going to be, you know, as low as you say, a pro-am at the Dunhill Links, where you know you've got to be making birdie every third hole, otherwise you're not keeping up with the pace.
On this particular independent review or article, it says, moreover, the last eight winning scores on the PGA Tour read 17, 18 under, 21, 18, 25 under, 16 under, 22 under, 16 under. Yeah. And his Canadian Open win came at 22 under.
You talk about no penalty for bad shots. How many PGA Tour setups do you go to where you can absolutely spray it off the tee, find your ball and play a shot into the green? There's no penalty on a number of tracks out in the PGA.
Well, yeah, you're also playing 36 holes at the home of golf, which have the biggest green complexes on the world stage. Yeah, so
yeah, and he's been undone at St Andrews in the past. Remember that round he played at? What was it, back in 2010? Was it when he shot 80 or 82 or something like that in the wind?
He led after day one, yeah.
Yeah, he knows damn well that those Lynx tracks need some wind to protect them. And if it's not there, then they're going to, people are going to score. They're going to be shooting 62s and 64s at will. It's that kind of setup.
He's not playing in Las Vegas this week. That's a dead cert. We've got the Shriners Hospitals for Children Open. It's always a nice, succinct title. I call it the Shriners, so we'll stick to that, I think. By the way, Cameron Champ was as big as 150-1 last week.
That's a big prize, wasn't it?
And we did say, going for the green, strong driving golf course, and he ranked as he always does. It's one of those courses when you watch it and you read the comments about Silverado, as long as you miss on the right side, fairways are academic because the rough is... Because the rough is such a dry golf course, the rough is short, and then you play from there, and that's exactly what Champ did. So
he'd been quite solid the week before. He was defending the week before, wasn't he? Is that right? I think so. And you know, without being spectacular, there were four solid rounds in there. But we've seen before when his game's on, he's
28th the week before. Yeah. I think he was, as ever, strokes. He was first for strokes going off the tee. But yeah, 60th for greens in reg and 60th for putting average. It didn't really turn you on, but scrambled nicely. But yeah, emotional win, got the job done. A bit of a different tournament this week in Las Vegas at the Shriners. It's a true, genuine resort golf course. Gets clearly a lot of tourist and local Las Vegas business traffic. Yeah. Desert golf course, resort in style, par 71, 7,255 yards, which at altitude doesn't even bear thinking about. I think a lot of the big hitters like a Finau or an Adam Scott, if they chose to, could just play 3-5 iron off the tees on most of these holes with the elevation. And they need to because it's... it's one of those golf courses. It's one of those tests. And this sounds... some of these numbers will sound a bit crazy, but it works through. Last year, we'll take 2018, 69.37 was the average score around here. So on average, the players were 1.63 under par.
Yeah.
So it was the 38th most difficult golf course of 49 on the tour. So genuine resort. Wide fairways, 33 yards wide at 300 yards, which compares to 24 yards wide last week at Silverado, and also 29 yards wide at Jackson. So we've got wide fairways, so similar to what we saw at Old White TPC. But there is a level of difficulty here. There's enough difficulty to discourage bomb and gouge, mainly because if you miss green complexes here, they are big, but if you miss them, this course is consistently in the top 10 most difficult for both scrambling and sand saves. So if you're not hitting greens, you are in serious trouble around here. Because you know, it's a double penalty. You're scrabbling away to make par while others are making birdies. So it's a double whammy. So, you know, we're not looking for scramblers this week. If you are scrambling, you are in serious trouble. You need to be hitting fairways metronomically, and you need to be hitting greens metronomically. Now, let me read this through to you. Last four winners in terms of strokes gained. So we're looking here at DeChambeau, Cantlay, Pampling and Kaufman. We take the average skill sets across those four. Strokes gained off the tee, 10th. That's high. Strokes gained approach, 12th. Strokes gained around the green, 15th. Strokes gained tee to green, 5th. Strokes gained putting at a birdie fest, 31st.
Yeah.
Translate that to traditional stats. Driving accuracy, 10th. This is across the last 9 winners, so a bigger sample size. Driving accuracy, 10th. That's a huge number for the PGA Tour.
Yeah, and that kind of correlates with the strokes gained numbers you just read as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know, some weeks, some tournaments, we can be seeing driving accuracy in the 40s.
Yeah.
10th. Greens in reg, 13th. So if you're slashing it from tee to green, you're not getting anywhere this week. Scrambling, 23rd. Putting average, 7th. So sometimes we see putting average as low as 1 or 2 or 3. This week it's putting average of 7th and strokes gained average of 31st. What that suggests to me is that really this is a true ball striking test from tee to green, where if you're hitting the ball close, you're making birdies on par 5s with 2 putts, that's fine. Yeah. You can sneak an eagle in there, absolutely fantastic. If you're hitting most of your par 4s with GIR, and creating chances 8 to 15 feet and converting a few, you're going to be right in the mix.
Yeah, it makes sense.
This isn't really the course where you need to be actually making huge volumes of putts in terms of distance made.
No. The key, as you said, is getting yourself in a position to score, get your proximity good, and that stems from hitting the fairway in the first place, and then make your fair share of putts. I expect if you're putting mid 1.6 average in old money, you're probably there or thereabouts if you're hitting enough greens in regulation.
Yeah. 1.67, 1.71 Cantlay, 1.68 Pampling. So yeah, it's none of this 1.59
business. Yeah.
That makes sense. Proximity, yeah, that certainly helps. Past winners, DeChambeau last year was at 14-1. Cantlay was at 20-1 in 17. I was on board that week. That was his first PGA Tour win. And then we had some crazy Pampling, who hadn't won anything for years. He was 350-1. Good luck with that. We had Smiley Kaufman at 250s, who'd just come up from the web.com at the time. Ben Martin at 225s. And then we've also got more obvious ones like Simpson at 20s, Moore at 14s, Gnaar at 60s, Bird at 50s. So a bit of a mixture. Clearly, I'm not plumbing the depths for 250 and 300-1 winners this week. But it does happen here on occasion. Although I will say, in my mind, I can't think of a better renewal than I'm seeing this week, because we have a field that has the depth of Koepka, Cantlay, DeChambeau, Simpson, Scott, Tony Finau, Matsuyama, Morikawa, Woodland, Neiman, and then we've got Champ, Snedeker, Hadwin, Kokrag, Benny Ann, Scheffler, Fritelli, Howe the Third, Chesrevi. That's a good field.
Yeah, compared Matthew to what Wolf, you would have Exactly. Compared to what you'd have expected from an old full series event, it's way beyond that, isn't it? Way beyond.
There's depth there, isn't there? You know, Anser, Poston, Cam Smith, Andrew Putnam. These are good players. Kevin Na, Bubba Watson, Glover, Harmon, Piercy. There's depth there. Lots and lots and lots of depth. Now, that Graham on his very great, nice review mentioned that we do mention local players. And I'll just mention this here because it does come into fruition sometimes in terms of players that have local links here. Now, if you're looking for players that live in this particular part of America, look no further than Alex Checker, Wyndham Clark, Ryan Moore, Kevin Nahr, Scott Piercy, Nick Watney, who played very nicely last week. Nick Watney putted well.
It's a couple of weeks where he's shown better form, isn't it?
Putting very well at the moment, Watney. Mm. I think he could be a nice triple-digit punt. And also Aaron Wise, who is a sea of blue, Aaron Wise. So someone said something about Aaron Wise. He's a local lad as well. I'm trying to find Nick Watney and what price he is. But he's playing some nice stuff. Maybe you can help me with that while I'm cracking on.
Yeah, 110 to 1, a couple of places with
Zach Johnson interested me as well, Paul.
Hmm.
He putted very nicely, and he's been hitting the ball very well on approach. And all of a sudden, the putter connected at Sanderson Farms 2 weeks ago.
Something's improving, because last time I watched him in any detail on TV, his iron game was dog awful. It was really, really poor. But he seems to be slowly coming round. And as you'd expect from a player of his undoubted quality, he's not going to stay in the doldrums forever. And again, it's a big price for Zach, 125 in a couple of spots as well.
It's just he hasn't top 10 for 15 months, something like that.
The way he was striking his irons, as I say, I think I followed him on one of the featured groups a few weeks back for a couple of hours, and it was really poor. He was really, to the extent where you just scrub him right off your list. But as we know, form's temporary with these guys, and they find something, something clicks, and we start moving back in a positive direction again.
Yeah, I think there's lots to be said about Watney. I think that's the one that's. Him and Zach Johnson would have come close for me. Personally, just looking at the winners here, I mean, there's one course that really shouts out. DeChambeau and Cantlay, even Rod Pampling. DeChambeau and Cantlay, both winners at Muirfield Village. Even Rod Pampling's got a third at Muirfield Village. Going back, you've got Kevin Nahr's one here in 11. He's runner-up at Muirfield. Ryan Moore's been a runner-up at Muirfield. So there's something in that. And that shouts to me again, as I always call it, the Cathedral of Ball Striking, Muirfield Village.
Yeah.
And I think you just need the same skill set. I really do around here.
Similar demands from Sea to Green, just with a more scorable end product. It's at Vegas, I think.
And that takes me to Colin Morikawa, who I've managed to sneak in at 30 to 1. He was 30 to 1, wasn't he, on first show with Paddy Power? That got et away when I was awake at 5 a.m. this morning. That had gone. So I managed to sneak it 7 each way with Bet Fred, 50 odds, on Colin Morikawa. He's never played Muirfield Village. Don't forget, he's only played 10 PJ Tour starts. Yeah, in 2019. Yeah. 14th in Canada, 2nd at the 3M Open, 4th at the John Deere Classic, 1st at the Barracuda Championship, 10th at the Safeway Open. That's pretty mental stuff. Oh, that's John Rahm-esque, isn't it?
He's a superstar in the making, that boy. That's for sure.
Hits tons of fairways. Is a 295, 300-plus man when he wants to be. No problem at all. But the beauty with Morikawa is he's a total driving kind of guy. He actually hits it long, he hits it straight. His approach play is fantastic. Just a little bit bulky on the putter, but you don't have to be the best of putters here. If you're hitting it into those key conversion distances, you'll make your fair share.
Yep.
Interestingly enough, that second at TPC Twin Cities, the 3M Open, was pure bent grass greens, as was the fourth at John Deere Classic. It's early on in his development, but we know that he can play on bent. We know that he can play on a mix of bent and Poana as well, with the first at Montreux, 10th last week at Silverado. He was the first player on my list this week by a long way. Listen to this. 3M Open, 26 birdies. John Deere Classic, 2 eagles and 16 birdies. Barracuda, when he won, 25 birdies. So it seems to me that at a birdie fest where scoreable conditions are on offer, it just takes these courses apart.
Yeah, we're nowhere near seeing the, you know, how good this kid really is. And I think he's going to win a lot of events over the next...
But I think, yeah, Muirfield Village, if he's in any kind of form next June, like next year, when we arrive at Muirfield Village for the Memorial, I think he'll be one on my list for certain.
Yeah.
He's that ball-striking mentality. Yeah. Also, he's Californian, born and raised. So Cantlay, California, DeChambeau from California. That would be a trio of Californian talent if he was to win this week. So he's the one for me at the top, Colin Morikawa. I did have a look at Adam Scott. The trouble with Adam Scott is I always find his price at 20-1 never a great turn on for a man that hasn't won for six, would it be 5 years coming up for?
Yeah, something like that. And he dropped away again last week, didn't he? After
and he's,
yeah,
but he's so
really
wayward
well.
Off the tee, Paul.
Mm. Yeah, that's not his game, is it? Not his
he's added this to his list on the basis of, you know, you have to now, don't you, as a PGA Tour pro.
Yeah.
But he actually has a non-existent record in the desert of the States going back to when he's been playing, you know, since 1999 or whatever the year would be. Just doesn't play in the desert.
Right.
And his world match play record at Dove Mountain, I think he scraped through a couple of first rounds and that was that. So that wasn't really the kind of...
No. Didn't appeal to me either, I must say.
Who at the top of the market would you be backing?
I have backed Molly. The only one I have backed at the top is Morikawa. Yeah, I think he's a great bet this week. It's a good field, and he's going to have to beat some good players. But I think the kid's going places, and he's worthy of support at around the 30-1 mark. So I agree with you wholeheartedly, I must say.
I mean, Cantlay and DeChambeau clearly love the course, don't they? Great records here. But, you know, Cantlay's two-time winner at 12-1. DeChambeau, if he gets... It would really, really amuse me if they lump him with Brooks in the feature group. That is just going to crawl, of course. You can imagine there's a lot of management talk, I would have thought, on DeChambeau's side to make sure that he doesn't get grouped with Koepka.
We shall find out later this evening.
After this speed. Well, they try and avoid it, don't they, the PGA Tour? They don't like friction.
Don't want the conflict.
They don't want it.
That would be hilarious, wouldn't it? That would be compulsive viewing on the featured groups. Yeah.
I noticed last week that Justin Thomas and DeChambeau were split on opposite sides of the draw as well, because there's a little bit of friction there as well.
Yeah.
Because it was Koepka and Thomas that were with DeChambeau at the... Northern Trust when it all broke out.
Yeah.
Simpson hasn't really shown a lot recently, has he? Scott, I think, is just all, you know, he's just so inaccurate off the tee. Whether he's going to have the mentality to just go with three iron on this golf course and actually hit fairways remains to be seen. If he does that, I think he's got a great chance.
Yeah.
I mean, he was first for putting average last week, Adam Scott.
Yeah, it's a mad thing. As I say, his stats have just kind of flipped on their head, haven't they? You'd expect him to be a strong tee to green player when he's playing well, and you know, putting at 1.9, but it's all flipped completely on his head.
And then you get Tony Finau at his usual 22-1.
Mm. Yeah, heading for his.
He was right position. In the mix last week, wasn't he, at St Andrews?
Yeah, and dropped away.
And then the standard cold putter on Sunday.
Yeah. It just doesn't convert, does he? And again, they talked about it a lot on commentary, and everyone can see what a talented guy is, but it's just those Sunday woes. It just doesn't happen.
So I forgot about Matsuyama. Matsuyama, he's an enigma at the moment as well. The fact that players love Matsuyama's ilk is actually playing the Shriners suggests to me there's a player desperately trying to find some form. More than anything else. Gary Woodland plays. Joakim Niemann. Could he go win in three events, potentially? Kind of player that will play well around here, Niemann. Yeah. 33-1. Champ at 40, Snedeker at 45s. I then plunged on Adam Hadwin at 45-1. That's my next tip. 1.5 points each way. 45-1 for Adam Hadwin, who is an absolute desert resort golf specialist. I won't bore you with the numbers, but the one number that did just jump out at me when I worked it through was, across the Desert Challenge, or whatever they call it, the old Bob Hope Classic, he shot 84 under par the last four tournaments he's played there.
He's won
on the Canadian tour. They play down in California in the desert. He's got top tens in the desert as well on the Corn Ferry. He was 10th there in 2015 on debut. Now, that's when he'd just become a PGA Tour rookie. That was his second event on the PGA Tour, and he finished 10th there. He's a far better player than that now. He was third for strokes gained putting last week. Oh, sorry, he sits third for strokes gained putting, 12th for greens in regulation, and 20th for putting average across my eight-week trackers. Hitting lots and lots of fairways as well. I just think he's the sort that can plot his way around here. And if we're saying that Joakim Niemann and Jason Day are locks for Ernie Els captain picks, I think it would be hard for Niemann being a winner and a good world rank, and clearly Jason Day will make it. There's two spots up for grabs. You know, Sung Jae-im's been playing brilliantly of late. You'd hazard a guess that if Hadwin could get a win here, or even a runners-up spot, he's got to be close to getting into that President's Cup squad that's been chosen in 3 weeks' time.
Yeah. Needs must for these guys who've got aspirations of...
You can't just chill out, can you?
No.
If you want to make that team, you've got to keep you've got to keep pumping in results. And you just look at the rota that's coming up. He could play Houston next week, which doesn't feel Adam Hadwin like to me, a long 72. He's likely then to go to the CJ Cup, which is a real bomber's golf course, Japan. I think this week is his best opportunity. Desert golf course, which is short and just strategic to a tee. I think that's Adam Hadwin down to the ground. Two more. First tip I actually wrote this morning at 5 a.m. was Brian Harman. I know you're a bit of a Harman fan, aren't you?
Yeah. For certain tracks and certain setups, tee to green, and he can be a good putter as well. He just struggles with length, doesn't he, off the tee? But I can see a logic with this, with it being at altitude and clearly negating the need for being able to smash it 310 off the tee.
He didn't take to it straight off. I'll be frank with you, but his last outing here in 2016, he was actually 15th. And looking at the detail, he was in the last couple of groups on the Saturday.
Yeah.
So he clearly started to get his head around it with an 8 under 63 on the Friday. And it seems to work to his strengths to me, as you said. 2014 John Deere Classic Champion. He won that at 22 under. He's won both of his titles on pure bent grass greens. And he's just playing some really nice stuff right now. He's an aggressive, nuggety kind of player. And he doesn't mind mixing it. You know, that win that he had at Eagle Point, the Wells Fargo Championship, he stared down Dustin Johnson and John Rahm.
Oh, yeah, I remember it. Well, I think I was on him 80-1 that week.
You were?
Yeah.
And he had a very similar form pattern coming in. It was kind of, I think, like a 14th. And then before that, he had a top 6 or 7 the outing before that.
Yeah.
Very, very similar pattern, the way that he's playing right now, Harman. And I've always said this, at this time of year, someone in that kind of outside the 50 to 100 bracket, you have a good full autumn calendar where you pump in lots of good results in relatively weak fields, and you can get yourself in that top 50 in the world again. You get that invite coming through for Augusta. If you're of the ilk of the mindset and you're in good enough form and confidence, you can really make hay at this time of year. And that's the kind of thing that I would put at Brian Harman that he would do.
Yeah.
So a point each way, 60-1, 8 place each way with Paddy Power on Harman. And then more of a putter, but someone that's really caught my eye of late. I know there's a few on the Facebook group that like this guy because they landed a rather juicy win a while ago on him. JT Poston. Won the Wyndham Championship in August at 22 under par.
Yeah.
And you just look at his record. It's just golf courses you can take apart. You know, Puerto Rico Open, the Barbasol Championship, 21 under. PGA West, the Desert Classic in California again, 20 under. Sedgefield, 22 under. Just loves golf courses where you're basically aiming for pins and you're shooting low scores. Again, 67th in the world, JT Poston, after a good run of late. Another win right now would really boost him into the situation where all of his majors, all the WGCs are booked for 2020.
Yeah, he'd be right on the brink, wouldn't he, of top 50 if he was to win this.
Very 16th at the BMW at Medina, which of course, top 70 players on tour, shows you that he will mix it. 66-68 weekend, clearly confident. Came out of the traps on fire at the Sanderson Farms. I think he was at 8 under 64 to, might have been co-leading after round one at the Sanderson Farms, which shows you that he's still in the right mindset to compete and contend. I think Poston at 66 to 1 here, 8 places with Paddy Power, is another good bet. He was 4th here 2 years ago.
Yeah, there's lots to like.
Yeah, hits fairways, putts really, really nicely. So I could see Poston being in there as well. So Poston, Harmon, Adam Hadwin, Colin Morikawa. They're the four that I've gone for. I hope and pray that Harold Varner doesn't win this week. So again, I think I'll be jumping out of the office window here.
I know, Barry, you couldn't make it to the pod today. He's back to Harold Varner this week. So
playing nice stuff, Varner.
He is, and Barry's in decent nick with his bets and his DraftKings teams recently. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Varner play well this week. But we shall see. We shall see.
You've gone for a big price, haven't you?
I've gone for three big prices, actually. I've gone for Morikawa at the top end, but I've gone for Cameron Percy at 150 to 1. Who's, this journeyman Australian. He's 45 years old now, but... he's actually at his highest world ranking right now for 7 years. He's been playing some decent stuff. He had a decent, solid Korn Ferry campaign. Started this PGA Tour season well too, with 11th place at the Sanderson Farms. Shot 65 in the first round there, so he was second after the first day. 7th last week at the Safeway. Finished off with a 67, which was one of the better rounds on the day. And he gets in courtesy of that top 10 finish last week. So he's got to when he gets these opportunities, he's got to make the most of them, really, to get some decent points and earnings on the board. If you look back through his PGA Tour record, his best PGA Tour finish came here at TPC Summerlin back in 2010. And you remember this playoff, Steve, because it's the one that Jonathan Bird won with a hole in one. Yeah, and it was virtually dark, wasn't it? And Percy and who was the other guy in the playoff?
Would have been Martin Laird.
Yeah, that's right, Martin Laird. So Laird and Bird and Percy in the playoff, and they debated about whether they should play that final hole or wait until the morning because it was getting so dark, but. They decided to play it, and the rest history with Bird making that ace.
Percy makes a lot of sense, yeah. The kind of bloke that could sneak a top eight, yeah.
Yeah, so I got him at 150 to 1 with top 7 for that. But I think that was a price worth taking on. Secondly,
good, a very strong top 20 bet, I'd suggest, with Cameron Percy. Top 10 if you're in that kind of line of fire.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of motivation for him to do well because, as I say, for him to...
Got to make high, mate.
Yeah, for him to make the field from his top 10 last week, you know, this is bonus time. You go out there and you earn as much money as you possibly can.
You've got to.
I've also gone for Zach Blair, who finished fourth last week. He earned himself another crack at the PGA Tour following an excellent finish to the Korn Ferry season last year. 4 top 10, 11 finishes and 5 starts. And then he got that win that he was looking for at the Ellie Mae Classic, which was, and we're talking about decent scoring, 17 under that was that week, but on a par 70. So that's really quite a deep score, 263 total that was. And generally a straight hitter. What was noticeable last week at the Safeway, that his short game was really on fire. Second for scrambling, first for total putts on the week. He took just 104 putts on the week last week. And that was after opening with a 75. For the final three rounds, 66, 66, 68 was by far the best three-round aggregate score of the entire field last week after opening with a 75. Interestingly, he putted really well just before he got that Ellie Mae Classic win earlier in the year. So with confidence flowing through his putter, I wouldn't be surprised to see him going well again this week. And 200 to 1 for a guy who finished fourth last week, I just couldn't resist that. I had to take that. And the final one is completely left field. Well, perhaps not. I mean, this guy won quite recently, actually. Jim Herman, 500 to 1.
The Herminator.
The Herminator, yeah. He is random as you like, isn't he?
Mate, you'll never read him.
But we've seen a couple of times that when he gets a chance, he is well capable of actually winning an event. And,
yeah,
you know, some players simply can't get over the line, whereas some players like Jim Herman, you get a sniff of it, and Ted Potter's another one. They do absolutely nothing. And then they get a sniff of a win, and bang, away they go, and they win at some obscene price.
Yeah.
So I've taken said obscene price of 500 to 1.
He's just a GIR monster, isn't he, Herman? Just,
again.
And that works around here. That works around here. I noted with him, I think his last finish here was the best that he's played here, Herman. Top 20, he's, something like that?
He's got an 18th here, and interestingly, during that time, during that round or that week, he shot a 62, which is a lovely low score. I mean, he shot 26 under to win the Barbasol a few starts back. So clearly can go very, very low when his game's on. And comes in this week after miscut. And he won his first event back in 2010 after seven consecutive miscuts. Yeah. You'd never picked him out.
No one will be on him the week he wins, Jim Herman. He's a bookmaker's dream when he wins.
Absolutely.
He clears the week. But, Herman, he's the sort.
Yeah, I thought, again, going back to, and you read through some of the winning odds of the players here, and unless you get someone who's, glaringly obvious, some of the others are just absolutely mad prices. So I've taken a punt with the Herminator, as you say, to see how he gets on this week at a mad 500 to 1. But yeah, they're my three. But yeah, of the top, and I've got to agree with you, I think Colin Morikawa is a very strong punt this week.
Now, you've got a actual National Open this week.
Off to Spain for the Open de España. Bit of a low-key affair, to be fair, compared to some of the other Spanish Opens that we had in the past. And it's a bit of an odd one, the Spanish Open, isn't it? Because sometimes you go to really tricky tracks that, par's a good score. They've played at Valderrama. They've played some coastal tracks earlier in the early 2010s where it's, some particularly tough tracks. This one looks like it's going to be the polar opposite and a proper birdie fest this week. But yeah, we've got this. We've got Italy. So we're back in the Rolex series next week. So we've got the Italian Open. And then we've got France and Portugal. So we've got a good stretch of European action before the final series kicks in following the WGC HSBC champions at the end of the month. But yeah, it's still a decent event from a betting perspective, I think. And the New Orton spot for this event, as per the French Open in a couple of weeks' time, as per Wentworth, as we saw a couple of weeks back. So slight difference in conditions. And we're returning to the Club de Campo in Madrid, which has hosted five Spanish Opens back in the 90s and not hasn't hosted the event since as a Spanish Open. So going back into the 90s, you had the likes of Roger Davis, Eduardo Molinari, Colin Montgomery, Seve won, Padraig Harrington won this event back in the 90s to give you a flavour of the type of player who was getting over the line back then. The course has also hosted the Tour España Masters back in year 2000. Harrington won that again. So clearly, Padraig really enjoys this particular track. Opened to Madrid 2001-5, won by the likes of Goosen, Steen Tinning, Ricardo Gonzalez won in 2003, Richard Sterney, and Rafael Jacquelin. Rafael Jacquelin won this at 23 under par on this track.
Wow.
Now, Rafael Jacquelin, in my mind, is a grinder. So for someone like Jacquelin to shoot 23 under to win this, to win an event on this particular track, tells me a very strong story about the scoring potential of this layout. Shel Schwartzel was the last person to win on this track, Madrid Masters in 2008. He was in the early field, but appears to have pulled out. He's been struggling with some injury
recently. I kind of just about remember that.
Yeah, 2008. Yeah, so, and that's the last time. So there have been a few changes since, but materially it's the same course, just lengthened slightly. The last three renewals held here were one at 19 under, 23 under, as I said, with Jacquelin, and 18 under. So that
it sounds like Rory McIlroy's dream location. I don't know why he's not playing this week.
He could go and tear the place up, shoot 25.
He could be shooting 29 under and finish 10th.
Yeah, he'd need to bring his putting shoes with him, I think, to be able to shoot that kind of score. Okay. But clearly, there's birdies and eagles to be made, which in good conditions is going to be the order of the day here. It's a 7,112 yard par 71. It's been extended by around 150 yards since they last played it. But materially, as I say, the course is the same. They've just put some new teeing options to try and counteract the fact that these guys are hitting it further and harder than ever right now. It's a Parkland track, tree-lined course, bent power greens. But for me, it's far more like a traditional Italian Open, so a scoreable tree-lined track than a Valderrama, yeah, for instance.
Yeah.
Again, looking at the conditions this week, it's going to be dry, sunny, up to around about 80 Fahrenheit. Very light winds, 5, it might eke up to 7-8 miles an hour, but negligible in that respect. So I'm expecting some decent low scoring once again this week, I think. Just looking through the stats of the players, and there are some patchy stats available for those events held here after the Spanish Open moved to Pastures New. And generally, it's been decent enough accuracy. Don't have to be massively accurate. Hit a fair number of greens, but performance on and around the greens has been fairly critical to success here. And given that you need to make a lot of birdies and keep your card as clean as possible, I think that makes a level of sense, really. You need to be able to make the birdies. You need to be able to make eagles. Three par fives, which are all reachable. So attack those with a bit of power and take your chances on and around the greens. Just going back through, I mean, as I said, this is a nomadic event, so you're gonna have some variance in terms of the courses played. But just to give you an idea of the type of players that have won at the Spanish Open in recent times, 2010, Alvaro Quiros, 18-1. 18-1, he must have been playing some cracking stuff back in 2010. Nothing like that. You could say 10 times the price on that nowadays. Thomas Aiken, 45-1 the year after. Francesco Molinari, 16-1 in 2012. Rafael Jacquelin again, 55-1. There's clearly some correlation with Jacquelin and Spanish tracks, full stop. 55-1, Jacquelin. Miguel Angel Jimenez, the mechanic, won at 22-1 in 2014. Can he rekindle some of that old magic this week? We shall see. James Morrison, 2015, 225-1. Andrew Beef Johnson won at Valderrama, 2016, 100-1. No event in 17. And then John Rahm won last year at that kind of pseudo Lynxy type track in Madrid again at 4-1 last year. So a bit of a mix there, ranging from 4-1 all the way up to 225-1. So no real clues, I don't think, in terms of winning odds.
Who's going to be brave enough to lay John Rahm on the exchange this week?
Yeah, well, he's the favourite, isn't he? 3-1 generally now. He's been backed in as well, so clearly there's a lot of excitement about Rahm. I think for me, he's going to have to putt far better than he did last week to even get close to contending. But he absolutely loves these events that where you can get kind of 22, 25 under. And he's 3-1 for a reason. Yeah, he's a flat track bully. He's 3-1 for a reason. It's a dangerous game if you're allowing him. He's the most likely winner. That's fair, clear to see, I think. Garcia 6-1, Cabrera Bello 12-1, Hao Tong Li 18-1, Andrew Pavan 18-1. If Pavan had been a little bit longer, I'd have been quite interested. But 18-1, given that you've got two guys at the top of the betting in Rahm and Garcia, who quite reasonably could walk away with this, it's just not an each way bet for me. Adrian Ailes 33s, Ross Fisher 45s, and then 50-1 bar for the field. So you've got seven players in this field at sub 50-1, and then it's 50-1 field. It's quite a stretched field very, very quickly as you go down, which is
unbelievable.
It does make it an interesting dilemma as to how to play that this week. A couple of other stats just before I go into who I've gone for. Every winner that I read through from 2010 of the Spanish Open had achieved a top 10 finish, or at least one top 10 finish in their last 10 starts. So a smattering of form seems to be positive. But there's no real course form here in terms of the Spanish Open, because you're going back to, as I say, the mid-90s before you're seeing that. And even when just looking at the Spanish Open in general, players have come here with no Spanish Open form and won on a different track. They've come here with good form and won. They've come here as a debutant, as John Rahm did last year, and won. So looking at previous Spanish Opens for a guide as to whether a player is going to go well or not could be a masterstroke. It could be a complete red herring. It's fairly random from what I can see. So that does leave you with a dilemma. Leaves me with a dilemma as to how to play this, because you could go for one of the players near the top. Rahm could win this. Sergio could win this. And Rahm's European Tour record is phenomenal. It's 4 European Tour wins from 13 European Tour starts so far. And he does love a birdie fest, as we've said here. Just needs to putt well, and I think he'll be right in the mix.
Can I just stop you? Let me read this out. Sorry. I just thought I'd dig into this.
Hmm.
Spanish winners of the Spanish Open, yeah?
Yeah.
Seve Ballesteros 3 times. Sergio Garcia. Alvaro Quiroz.
Yep.
Miguel Angel Jimenez and John Rahm. It doesn't say a lot for the likes of players that could interest you. Pablo Larrazabal, who else could we be looking at? Jorge Campillo, Nacho Elvira. That kind of second tier Spanish player to this point hasn't got the job done here.
No, kind of a mid-priced Spanish player. Yeah, even an Adrian now. So had he been a little bit longer, I could have been quite interested.
You might have tempted on him, but it's short, isn't it, at 28?
Yeah, exactly. And for a player who's still seeking that first European Tour win, he's one on the Alps Tour. He's well capable of winning.
Does he win his home Open for his first European Tour title? It seems like that'd be a huge achievement if he was to do that.
It does. It does feel a bit of a stretch, doesn't it? And it does. As I say, it kind of leaves you with this dilemma, because you could look at Rahm. Rahm could win quite easily. Sergio, if he putts well, could win. He won his last start, didn't he, at the KLM Open. 7 of his 16 European Tour wins have come on Spanish soil. So clearly he reacts on home soil. But if you were back in a Pavan or a Cabrera Bello or Hao Tong Li at those kind of sub 20-1 prices, you could be just staring at an each way place at best if one of those two guys goes and
gets himself into
a mad win.
You need a Spanish speaking European Tour proven winner who isn't Spanish.
Yeah, that kind of where I ended up going, Steve. Funny,
really amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I did go around the house with this, but I decided to play it quite aggressively, and I have put up Andres Romero at 125-1 as my headline. Now, this has all the hallmarks of a bet that could go completely horribly wrong, or it's one that could be an absolute masterstroke. Because this guy is missed cut City until such point as he decides to turn it on, and then the boy's a winner. He can go out and win.
He's made a career of that, though, Paul.
Absolutely.
And some good wins.
Yeah, he has had some good wins. He's won twice on the European Tour. He's won on the PGA Tour. Should have won the 2007 Open Championship at Carnoustie. He double bogeyed the 17th and bogeyed the 18th to miss the playoff with Sergio and Podrej by a shot. That should have been his claret jug to take home.
But if you were to categorise him, as we do. You know, you said to me, Tom Lewis, we need a nice wide course on the United States where he can score. That could be Houston next week.
Yeah.
I doubt if it's this week at TPC Summerlin.
He's a real eye-catcher last week, by the way, Tom Lewis.
Yeah. So he's definitely on the radar for next week, which probably means he wins this week. But Andres Romero, wild striker with the ball off the tee, but a phenomenal scorer and putter. He just needs width.
Yep.
A course that gives him that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I can see the logic here.
Yeah. And I think there is enough. It is tree line, but as I said to you, it's wide enough to get away with some shots and to play some recovery shots. But the real key is getting up and down and making your birdies. And when his game's on, absolutely.
Yeah. And he was T2 at altitude a few weeks ago, wasn't he, at the European Masters?
He was, yeah. That was he lost out in a playoff that week to Sebastian Soderberg. Shot 61 on the Friday that week, which was an incredible round around that particular track. He's finished sixth at the Spanish Open in the past, back in 2007. He finished third on Spanish soil back in 2005, which was his best professional result at the time on the Challenge Tour. He arrives here after two miscuts on the trot. That's what you expect with Andres Romero. He's kind of miscut, win. That's the way the guy rolls. So I'm not in the slightest bit worried about that. He won the BMW International Open a couple of seasons back after four consecutive miscuts. Similar kind of price. So if he's going to win, it's going to come from seemingly out of the blue. But as you say, he's arriving with some relatively recent form, some relatively recent good form at Grand Saucier. Some strong Argentinian ties with this as well, with Ricardo Gonzalez winning at this track back in 2003. Interestingly, he also won at Grand Saucier in his career as well. So perhaps some kind of tenuous links there. His boyhood hero, Eduardo Romero, won on this track back in 1991. So can he follow in his idol's footsteps nearly 30 years further down the line? I think 125-1 is a fair price to take that chance and see if he can do just that. So yeah, I've headlined with Andres this week. Let's see how he gets on. Three others I've gone for. Callum Shinquin, a slightly more standard bet here based on some strong recent form. And Callum, going back to last week, Matt Southgate. We've seen so many players who struggle to get over the line, and Southgate's, you know, clearly one who's needs to just get that in his head, get that final bit of mental fortitude, I guess, that's going to allow him to get over the line. But we've seen the likes of Jorge Campillo and Erik van Rooyen, both of them get over the line this year so far. And Callum Shinquin's another who's in that same kind of category for me. You remember back to the Scottish Open a couple of years ago, where he basically, it was his title to win. He's walking up the 18th tee, up the 18th fairway, ball in the middle of the fairway, par five, needs to make a par to win the tournament, and contrives to make a six, lets Rafa Cabrera bellow into the playoff, which he subsequently loses. And that's a dagger to the heart when that kind of thing happens. Recently as well, he's had another chance. He was joint lead going into Sunday at the KLM Open alongside Sergio Garcia a few weeks back, and drifted away on the Sunday, finished fifth eventually. But there's enough to like, I think, in his game to suggest that he can do well here this week, I think. Two eagles, 41 birdies in his last two outings. Second to halfway last time he played a Spanish Open. I think over time, these kind of players will slowly get to understand what it is they need to do on a Sunday that's going to get them over the line. And Erik van Rooyen's a perfect example of that. You know, you get chance after chance after chance, and then one Sunday, feels calm, goes out, everything clicks, and bang, away you go. Shoots a nice bogey-free 66 or 65 or whatever it is that he did to win the tournament a few weeks back. And it gets that monkey off of his back. And I think Callum's in the same kind of boat. 50 to 1's the reward for taking on Callum Shinkwin this week. And I think he's a decent bet with his current form right now. A couple of 80 to 1 shots to finish. First up, Rickard Karlberg. He's another one who struggled a little bit with injury, but also struggled with the mental side of the game as well. And he took entire 2018 off to get himself straight, basically. He was seeing a few stories of these pros who've kind of fallen out of love with the game and really struggling with the mental aspects of it. And he's another one of these guys who's had to take some time out to work out how to best approach the second phase of his career. But he's seems to have come back strong. He's eased himself back in on a medical extension, got a bit of confidence on the Challenge Tour by notching a couple of top six finishes. And then he's come back to the European Tour on this extension and finished fifth at the Czech Masters, sixth at the KLM Open. And shown some decent form. He's the kind of player, I think, who wins a Spanish Open. He's that kind of ilk, I think. His one win came in Milan at the Italian Open on a very similar setup, tree line track, Ben Power Greens, similar length. A lot of correlation there in terms of the way that sets up. And for me, this does feel more like an Italian Open type setup than a kind of a tough Spanish Open. It's certainly not a Valderrama type setup, that's for sure. And also finished second to Chris Wood at Wentworth the year after that effort in Italy, Karlberg. So, again, for some tree-lined form, there's a very strong indicator there that he can play this kind of golf. 80-1 was the price that I took with Karlberg, and also took 80-1 with Wade Ormsby, who's just one of a handful of players with some proper tangible course form here this week. Finished 6th and 12th here in 2004 and 5 when it was played as the Open de Madrid back then. For his 8 rounds that he played over those 2 years, he shot 65, 66 3 times and a 67. Clearly suits his eye. I think he could go well again this week. 9th at the Spanish Open in 2015, 5th at Valderrama in 2017. So he's got some good Spanish form in the wider context too. And for me, this kind of shorter setup is absolutely where he can come to the fore. He won at Fanling at the Hong Kong Open as his only European Tour win. 8th at Crans-sur-Sierre earlier this year, a few weeks back. And that backs up a decent season that he's had where he finished second at the Vic Open, 8th at the Swedish or the Scandinavian Invitational. And right now, he's sitting 71st in the race to Dubai. So after a couple of missed cuts at Wentworth and then again last week at St Andrews, he needs to seriously pull his finger out if he's going to make the top 60. So needs must for Wade Ormsby this week. But yeah, that's where I am. So Ormsby, Karlberg, both at 80-1, Shinkwin at 50s, and Andres Romero at 125-1 are the four that I've gone through this week.
I like Romero, yeah.
I think he's worth a punt, I do. You can play these weeks quite safely, and I could quite easily have gone for a hefty Andrea Pavan punt. And if you'd have got 8 places with kind of mid-20s to one, maybe it would have been worth taking on. But he could have finished second to John Rahm, who walks out the 8-shot winner, and you're struggling to make, to even break even on the week with that kind of bet. So I've gone a little bit more further down the list this week for my picks.
I'm just going to have to, I'm going to have a bet on Harold Varner, I think. I can just see it, mate. I can see it.
Yeah, cover him off on the exchange.
Like an express train hurtling towards me with the headlights on. Yeah, and I'm tied to the rails.
Cover your week off on the exchange and be done with it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, but we will see. The joys of golf betting. Thank you for your time, as ever.
Yeah, best of luck, Steve, this week. Got best a winner coming, Steve. I can feel a winner coming, so it's just
right. We need a winner desperately.
It's coming.
Thank you to you. Thanks to the listeners, as ever. We will be back again next week for the Italian Open on the European Tour. And it's the Houston Open on the PGA Tour. So two decent events to get stuck into again next week from a betting perspective. As ever, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Bamford Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. And if you could leave us a review, it would be absolutely fantastic. Thanks for listening. See you again soon.